Hello, welcome to the Inside Elland Road podcast, episode 69 from the Yorkshire Evening Post. I'm Graham Smith, chief football writer at the YUP, and today I'm joined by Joe Urquhart, one of our Leeds United journalists, and former Leeds defender and LUTV presenter and pundit, Ben Parker. Hello, gentlemen.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So let's start with what happened at the weekend with Leeds United, and the fallout really has carried on into the week. So the game itself at Millwall at the Den amid a raucous atmosphere, the game begins and 14 minutes in, the referee makes a decision that changes the course of the game, deciding that Gaetano Berardi had not only fouled Tom Bradshaw, and it was a goal-scoring opportunity that he denied, so he sent him off. Millwall scored the penalty. They got another one against 10-man Leeds just before the break. Leeds hit back 15 seconds into the second half through Alioski, but couldn't find a second goal. Another frustrating result just before an international break for Leeds. Ben, we'll come to you first, and we'll talk about the obvious talking point. What did you make of what happened on 14 minutes?
Well, initially, obviously, I was doing the commentary with Michael Waydock. You don't really get the replays, do you? There were none down there. So initially you just thought, well, Calvin was close by. Was it red or not? Was the contact? You couldn't really see. And then we got fired through the video, the replay, and it was a shambles of a decision, basically. Absolute shocking. And then you start hearing a little bit more in depth about the referee doing the Leeds games in the past, how many players he's actually sent off. And you're just thinking, well, yeah, he's got the record of doing that, so why keep giving him our games? I don't really understand that point of view. But I have to say how the club have reacted and put out the statements of from the owner on the way down. I think they've shown a bit of class, to be fair. They've obviously just not going to roll over and accept these kind of decisions, because ultimately it's cost us a big 3 points. And, well, yeah, the table's ever so close at the moment, but it'd have been a massive result going down to Millwall, where we don't historically do really well. And I thought we started all right the first 14 minutes, kept them at bay, looked quite dangerous. But no, that poor decision, it did change the game. So, having said that, I thought our reaction second half were different class. I thought we were superb. Unfortunately, we just couldn't quite get that equaliser. But the decision itself, we're an absolute shambles.
Your initial take, Joe, was not a penalty, dive.
Yeah, I'm taking credit for that.
Eagle eye.
It's just, I always, one of these people, I think if something happens and your first instinct, I always think just draw on your first instinct.
Yeah, true.
And I thought, just the way that he went down, he took that extra touch. I just thought, he went down too late. If he was going to go down because of the contact, it would have been a step before. So my initial reaction was, looks like he's gone down fairly soft. Obviously, when the referee gives a penalty, right, fine. He's clearly seen some contact. He looked, on first view, looked like he had a decent view because Bradshaw was running across. But then I think, having even seen it initially, looking across and seeing him give the red card was even more baffling than the penalty decision. You go, fine, all right, you make the penalty decision, that's one. But when you see, even when you see the replay, Phillips is there, even White, you know, it's just compounding an error with another error. I think we mentioned it on passing at the full time, Ben, but obviously Berardi put himself in that situation. But that's not an excuse for the referee to then send him off or make such a bad decision like that. So it's just a shame, because Leeds went down there with a lot of hope. You know, they started well, they sort of weathered that storm in the first 10 minutes, and then to have it sort of taken out their hands like that, the double whammy of conceding a penalty, scoring and having Berardi sent off, just never really had a chance after that. They put up a good fight, but it didn't feel like they were ever going to sort of get that equaliser, I think.
They had 68% possession in a game against a team with a man advantage, which I thought was remarkable. But it was, you know, people have suggested that Millwall let Leeds have that possession. Millwall are not a possession team. We all know that. They've had the least possession in the division this season. But it was the man advantage really came into play when Leeds got the ball to the final third and then tried to pick a pass or a cross, and Millwall had just had more men, more bodies in the box, and Leeds just couldn't find a free man. But it was interesting that Bielsa, again, for the second time in a week, held his hands up to what he saw as an error. He said that he got it tactically wrong, removing Dallas from the midfield and putting him to right back in the first half, which meant that Bamford had to drop deep to try and get Leeds playing. Second half, Phillips pushed forwards to partner with Matthijs Glick in the midfield, and that meant that Bamford could push on again and provide a focal point for the attack. But there wasn't a great deal else that he could have done in the wake of that red card. That seemed like the obvious and natural thing to do, was push Ayling into central defence and Dallas to right back. And I thought Ayling performed really well.
I thought second half especially, I thought he was really brave in the positions he was taking up, because yeah, we like to play out from the back even with 10 men. And you saw the position of Ben White, he was really kind of wide on the right-hand side, almost like a right-back. Ayling were closer to a left-back position, stretching them so far. And yeah, I could buy into the argument where Millwall were kind of allowing us to have the ball, but on the flip side of that, I thought they did try and press us at times, but we passed that, bypassed the initial press. But then, yeah, like you said, get to the final third, that's when I think the man kind of disadvantage told, because Millwall, they had the kind of two blocks of four more or less behind the ball on back of that. So, but we know we were really brave second half. Obviously, they've gone in at half time, kind of readjusted little tactical positions. And like I said, I thought the second half performance overall were really good, really brave. But ultimately, we were just trying to find that killer ball, didn't find it enough. But in terms of, like I said, the bravery, the confidence to get on the ball, like obviously they've got a lot of trust in each other, a lot of trust in the manager as well. But no, like I said, ultimately it was just a poor decision to take the potential 3 points away from us.
Let's talk about the wingers in that game, because I thought Jack Harrison played really well. The final ball wasn't always there from him, or the final pass, but he did get an assist on the goal for Alioski, and Alioski had moved up to left wing because Barry Douglas had come on for Costa at half time. Douglas went to left back, Alioski went to left wing, and Harrison, who had been left wing, went to right wing, and it was Harrison who supplied the cross for Alioski to score the goal straight after the break. I thought Harrison was good. I thought Helder Costa was anonymous for the second time in South London in a week. Is it a case that Costa perhaps just hasn't had enough game time yet, hasn't had enough time under the system? Does he need to be shown a lot more patience and can't be judged on what we've seen so far?
I think with Costa, I think sometimes as a player, when you've been on the bench and there's been this big hype, everyone's bigging him up, he's come off the bench a couple of times, had a big impact, and then all of a sudden he starts the game. Sometimes as a player you think, I've got to do too much. I've got to produce assists, I've got to produce goals, I've got to beat my man every time. When sometimes if you just strip everything back and do the basics, then you let your quality take over, because Helder Costa is a fantastic player. Look, it's been two games down in London where he probably hasn't played to his capability, but I'd still rather him have it at the club. It's a fantastic option to have. I think it's just one of those where, like I said, just strip everything back, do the basics, don't think I have to keep producing, because all of us as fans, everyone connected with the club, we were crying out for Costa to start. Please start him from the off. And all of a sudden he started from the off. And don't get me wrong, it's been two tricky games down at Charlton and Millwall, going down to 10 men as well. So Saturday, yeah, just didn't kind of work for him. Being a man down, it's always difficult as a wide man, because you have to do a lot of work defensively. I think Costa, he's got that in his locker, but he'd much rather have the ball at his feet running the opposite way. So really can't blame too much of his performance for that. But like I say, yeah, if he gets another start after the international break, I think he just needs to just strip everything back. Remember, he's a fantastic player. Everyone loves him, the fans love him, the players really take to him as well. So just go out and do your thing. Don't overthink or overcomplicate your game.
Maybe suggests, Joe, that Bielsa maybe knows better than the rest of us, because there were those massive calls for Nketiah and Costa to start games. Costa has started games through injury and not really through Bielsa's plan. I'm not sure when the plan would have been to throw him in from the start, but Bielsa obviously sees enough in Harrison to stick with him and to keep playing him.
Yeah, and obviously it's easy to forget that the Den is such a difficult place to play for Leeds players, and it has been in recent history. And I think we saw maybe a flash of, you know, they're down to 10 men just, and you know, after 14 minutes, Costa maybe doesn't have the defensive side of his game as much as maybe Pablo and Harrison. And I think we maybe saw that in the second goal. He didn't get across to his man to stop the cross, and that was the first thing that Ayling turned round. Obviously, Bradshaw did well. It was a good finish, and he got across in front of Luke. But I think that was the first thing Ayling turned down and said, you can't, you've got to stop the cross at the point of delivery. So maybe it's just that workmanship down that wing, back and forward, you know, because going back towards goal under Bielsa is just as important as going forward. So maybe there's a bit of flash there. I actually thought when he put Nketiah on, it was probably, I quite like what Bamford was starting to do, and I thought he maybe was a bit hasty in taking him off on Saturday. So I know he came out in the last couple of weeks and said maybe he's got him wrong, but you can always overanalyse, can't you? And we all know that Bielsa does his analysis.
And he'd rather analyse the game and what he did wrong than the officials. You know, he stuck to his guns and wouldn't criticise the referee, but it was perhaps, certainly since I've covered the club, the most pointed he's been about officiating, when he highlighted there were three major decisions, the penalty, the red card and the Jack Harrison situation, not long after when Harrison went down in the Millwall box and didn't get a penalty. And looking at that, he certainly had more of a claim than Tom Bradshaw did. Let's talk about Bamford then, because again, I think Bamford's performances have been very, very good. I thought again at Millwall, he did really well. And I was surprised to see him come off when he did, because I thought having two up top and having more of a presence in and around the box would have perhaps helped for Leeds, you know, had they managed to get the ball into the box in the final stages. As it turned out, Millwall game managed really well towards the end, kept the ball in the corner, pressed, suddenly started really pressing, putting Leeds under pressure. Bamford looks like, the last couple of weeks, he looks like he's been a bit of a frustrated character, because he's working very, very hard, but he's not getting the rewards, is he?
Ultimately, strikers, they just love scoring goals. I think if I was playing in that team, I'd love Bamford playing up top, just because the work ethic he puts in, how he's holding the ball up now, he's fighting centre-halves and he's almost bullying him out of the way. He seems so strong, he's like a beast, don't he? Like a Calvin Phillips type of beast. Now, the argument is, could you get an Eddie Nketiah, another striker, or even a Tyler Roberts, whoever it might be, on the pitch at the same time as Patrick Bamford, just so you take that little bit of pressure away from him and it might free up a chance for him? Because, like I said, like, he's doing all the work outside the 18-yard box, when ultimately, I know deep down inside as a striker, he'd rather sacrifice all of that and get two goals a game. So it is a tricky one, because like we all know Bielsa, what he demands of the players, you alluded to there, Joe, off the ball, that's probably more important than what we kind of do on the ball. The work effort the players put in, it's crazy. I'd love to see the stats, the distances they run, the high intensity sprints they all do. They must be top of the charts for everything like that. But no, as a striker, he'll just want to score goals. But saying that, as a teammate, I'd love to play with him, because he'll keep defenders honest all day long. He'll make a bad clearance from one of the defenders into a good run, because he'll chase everything down. But it's just that argument in there. Can you get another striker on the pitch close to him, working off him, without disrupting the system and the formation? And that's the big question.
Yeah, the system and the formation, the difficulty at the minute is, of course, that they've lost the man who brings so much control, Adam Forshaw, to this niggling hip injury. They brought in Jamie Shackleton to replace him, and I thought he did, for his age, he did absolutely brilliantly. At Barnsley, you know, the flashes of his pace, running the ball from deep, taking leads from defence to attack in the blink of an eye. And he, of course, has picked up a hamstring injury as well, which has meant that Dallas has had to go into midfield. And as good as Stuart Dallas is, and we're yet to see him really have 90 minutes in the midfield to see what he can do, but he's a right-sided player. So Leeds have got this problem at the minute where they don't have the first or second choice central midfielder to play alongside Matthias Klick. It's just a case of who do you drop in order to put Nketiah in? Any thoughts on that, Joe?
No.
That's
because it's such a difficult question, isn't it? Because you look across the midfield and everyone's got different qualities to their game, and who do you take out? Because of the way Bielsa plays, they all seem like vital cogs in sort of the team. So it is a really difficult question. We obviously saw them play very briefly together at the end of one of the games, which escapes me, last month. But I just think, in isolation at Millwall, taking Bamford off at that time when we saw how they got the first goal was him with his back to goal. He laid it off to Click and then Click out to Harrison Alioski at the back post. I just felt like if they were going to get joy and get that second goal, that was how it was going to happen. It was going to be sort of Bamford holding up the ball, wrestling the defender and laying it off. So in isolation, I thought he maybe got that wrong, but I think you're right in what you say. He maybe is just a bit frustrated at the fact that he's not taking his chances, but the side to his game that we're seeing at the moment wasn't there last year, and whether that was because of injury or just the fact that he didn't get a decent run in the side, he still had a decent goal return last year in 10 or 11. But we weren't, maybe Leeds fans were frustrated because they weren't seeing this side of the game that's showing now. But now the problem is you've taken the goals away. So it's a, I suppose it's a fine thing, isn't it? You're getting Kettier, who's there pushing on. Every time he comes on, he seems to turn everything to gold. So I just think it's really hard to see them both getting in. You know, putting Roberts on was a bit of a roll of the dice, wasn't it? Because Phillips had obviously pushed more forward, but then it kind of lost control of the game, really, when he took Phillips off. So I can see why he maybe looks back at Millwall in isolation about his substitutions, but it is really difficult to pinpoint because they're all so vital in how Bielsa works.
And also, I think on top of that, if, without looking back to last season too much, we've come out of roof at the club when him and Bamford were fit at the same time. I know it wasn't
very briefly.
Very, very briefly, yeah. They did play together, didn't they?
Yeah.
And that was due to probably injuries in the midfield. Forshaw had his fair share, other players at the time. But it shows that he can trust two strikers on the pitch at the same time. Now, whether Bamford or Nketiah have got the capabilities of one dropping into a kind of a false 10 position, obviously Marcelo will only know that, the players will know that. But the option is there to maybe have a look at that, especially with Forshaw, Jamie Shackleton injured central midfield players. And then it'll solve kind of, instead of moving players around, like say Dallas, I think Dallas has been our best player this year from a right back position. And then with the injury to Cooper, you keep him there. You can put Ayling to centre half. So there's lots of different options there. So I think maybe he might do it. Maybe Millwall wasn't the right place to put two strikers from the off together. But the Birmingham game, it might be something as a look at if we are lighting numbers in that midfield area.
Well, for Birmingham, you would hope that Forshaw's problem will have had 2 weeks to clear up. Shackleton won't be too long after that. It was only 3 weeks, wasn't it? And it happened at West Brom. Three, 4 weeks for Shackleton. So he won't be too long before he's back. And Hernandez, there's a big possibility. Bielsa said that Hernandez will be back. So they won't be as light in, well, they shouldn't be as light in numbers when they come back. To finish off talking about Millwall, let's talk about the fallout since the game. Firstly, the Berardi red card was appealed by Leeds United for obvious reasons. The FA's independent regulatory commission took a look at it. They decided that it wasn't a red card, presumably because Phillips was covering, and it wasn't a clear and obvious goal-scoring opportunity. They also decided that it was not worth referring to a panel who review incidents where a player has potentially successfully deceived a match official. In other words, dived, thrown himself to the ground. So it was a foul, they're saying, but it wasn't a red card. I can only presume that they have seen footage that we have not been privy to, because the angles that I've seen suggest there was no contact. I'm yet to see an angle that says to me that was a penalty.
I'm with you, Graham. I'd love to know who's actually on these panels, to be honest, because, like you're saying, they must be watching an entirely different clip of footage from what everyone else has seen, because the amount of angles that's been flying around social media, everyone you look at, and when it keeps slowing it down as well, you just think it's a blatant dive. There's nothing to suggest there's been contact. Because when you feel contact, you go down immediately. When Brad is at his closest point to Bradshaw, he's took another two strides beyond that. And then I just think, I put my mind in Bradshaw, he's thought, well, Calvin's going to block my shot, take the ball off me. Do you know what? I'm going to throw myself to the floor and take a chance here. That's what I personally think he's tried to do. So, no, I think these guys on the panel, I think we need to know who they are, to be honest, because I think there's a lot of, there's a big cloud over these, like the panels, it goes to who are they? Like, say, come out and say who they are, and then people can say, well, I understand why he's on it because he's got a background of this, X, Y, and Z. But I think it's just a cheap kind of option for the FA to get out of it by saying, yeah, we'll rescind the red card, but there'll be no respective action on the dive. So it's a strange one all round, to be honest.
Maybe just one, Joe, that will go down as one of those frustrating points in the season, but it also feeds into that feeling that Leeds United fans have that the world is against them.
Yeah, maybe, not that it's always entirely true, but maybe it's a good thing to galvanise everyone together at a point where maybe results have been up and down a little bit. Maybe it can spark everyone into that feeling of us against the world sort of thing. To go back to a point Ben made, I think it does smack a little bit of protecting the match official, because obviously everyone can see, even when opposition fans are agreeing with Leeds United, I think there is a case to answer. So I think they've clearly just gone, it's not a red card, but maybe they've taken the easy way out, saying, well, it was a penalty, so there may be protection there a little bit. But yeah, I mean, like you just said there, reviewing the footage thousands of times, seeing it 10 seconds after it had happened on the pitch, it would never look like a penalty from the word go. So just amazing that it went to a red card. Well, you could sit here for an hour and analyse it, but it's just, yeah, a really bad decision.
The other incident occurred during the game when Patrick Bamford was substituted, and he was in the final third. Now I didn't see whether it was indicated by the referee that he should leave the pitch at the nearest point, or whether he, thinking that, you know, we want to get the substitution on, we want to try and get a goal back, whether he took the initiative and walked off at the far end. But he came off the pitch in front of the Leeds fans, which meant he had to walk round the corner and walk the gauntlet, as it were, in front of some home supporters. And it was quite obvious that, you know, things were being said to Bamford as he walked past, and he was listening. And then there was a moment where Bamford engaged in some dialogue with a home fan, made a gesture. I think the international symbol for your stomach is protruding, and then was ushered back to the dugout by Leeds coaches, and Bielsa kind of had moved in to put up a placatory hand. And He doesn't tend to like anything like that, Marcelo Bielsa, from what I've seen. You know, when I've seen a couple of moments with Alioski where Bielsa has not appreciated kind of words being exchanged. But as it turns out, Bamford was actually spat at by somebody in that stand, and that has brought into question this rule where players must leave the field of play at the nearest convenient spot rather than walking slowly off the pitch, which does grind the gears of every football fan when an opposition player does it. However, is the answer to this problem not simply that the referee stops the clock, or we move to a system where there's a stadium clock that stops at such times and restarts when the game starts again? Because football fans are being shortchanged by how much football they're actually seeing, even at the top level. The ball's out of play so often, and then the time that's added on is never really sufficient. But going back to that rule, there needs to be a bit of common sense, particularly in stadiums where a game where there's a little bit of needle between the two clubs is taking place.
Key word is common sense, because especially away from home, an opposition player coming off and doing like Bamford did, it's going to provoke a reaction from the fans. But I have to say, the Millwall fans, and there was quite a lot of them as well, I felt the behaviour were absolutely disgusting. Not only to Bamford, heard stories about the backroom staff as well, working at the club, some of the abuse they were getting. I just think, we know what it's like down at the Den. It is hostile. The fans are quite vocal down there. They let you know how they feel about you, to be fair. But
did you ever play there?
Yeah.
What was it like as a player then, sort of trying to
I just wanted to go shut them up, to be fair.
So it's a motivating factor then when you...
I tried to use it, yeah. I was like thinking, like, shout as much, like, used to be like trying to get the ball for a throw in, little things like they'd throw the ball 20 yards over your head, and they'd call you every name under the sun, and you try and have a little bit of ban and give him like a little wink, blow a little kiss and all that. Just trying to wind him up back, to be honest, because I don't know, I kind of grew up kind of like that, to be fair. But
are Leeds fans not the same at Elland Road with opposition? So when Derby came, you know, if Ricky Keogh was taking a throw-in,
Alfie Keogh,
when he was taking a throw-in, Would he not experience similar to what you might have experienced it, or do you not think it's to the same degree?
Yes and no. I think that's majority of football fans. I just don't think you can pigeonhole, say, Leeds fans do that, Millwall fans do that, Derby fans do that, or whatever it is. But I think there becomes a line, and I think Leeds United fans, on the whole, they do behave themselves really, really well. Unless it provokes, but that's kind of like anybody. But in terms of the spitting, I've never seen Leeds fans do that kind of stuff to an opposition player. That's just from my personal.
It's just a disgraceful. It's a disgraceful act.
I don't think there's anything worse you can do unless you're murdering someone. Like, being spat is like the lowest.
You'd rather get punched.
Yeah, it's a horrible, horrible thing. Going back to that, I think, I don't know, it always seems like in football generally, there's a lot of intimidating places to go, and fans are brilliant at making that atmosphere, but always seems to be maybe one or two incidents at Millwall in particular, in this fixture. So I guess it just surrounds maybe this fixture more than most, because Elland Road can be a very intimidating place, but they don't often maybe cross the line into spitting. So there is a line, I guess. So.
Well, the fourth official could obviously foresee the potential for an issue, because he said to stewards at the Den, "Watch out for Bamford coming around the corner."
Well, so exactly. It's a
so if the fourth official can see that there might be a problem, perhaps the referee could have taken it into his hands and told Bamford, "You know, just go off at the halfway line."
We are talking about a referee who sent Berardi off for a
we are,
ridiculous
but challenge. But we should also say that we don't know at this stage if he told Bamford to go off at that end, because I didn't see that. It might have just been Bamford's initiative and then his own bravery.
I just think,
walking in front of the Millwall fans.
Like Ben said, though, common sense, just don't use it for that fixture. Just don't use it, and maybe think of
make the team aware.
Just don't use that stupid rule in that particular fixture, because it's obviously a chance for a flashpoint. An opposition player walking 8 yards from the first row of the stand, it's obviously a chance for something to happen, so just eliminate that even possibility and take it off.
I'd get rid of the rule altogether. I'd just say if players start to walk off the pitch, yellow card them straight away.
Yeah,
they'll soon start getting a jog on. Is carry on walking, even give him a second yellow, or if the sub who's coming off, he's on a yellow card, he'll think, well, if I walk here, I'm going to get a second one just by walking. I'll go into it. Might be a slow jog, but at least he's making the effort to get off the pitch. I think I'd go down that route instead of going like your stop clocks, your stop watches in and around the ground. I think that kind of takes away from football, in my opinion. But I'd do that, because I think the rule overall, it is silly, because things, like you're saying, right, well, can I implement that rule at this ground, and can I do it this certain time? It just becomes too much of a farce then. I just think, scrap it all together. When the player gets subbed, if you're on the far side of the pitch, you've got to be seen to make an effort to get across the other side.
You've got 5 seconds.
Yeah. We'll have a countdown.
Exactly. A sprint
that would
across.
Be super, wouldn't it?
5 seconds or you get a yellow card. If you're on a yellow card, you're certainly getting a rush, won't you?
Yeah. So we're in the international break now.
What's us feeling on international break, guys?
It's hellish. It's the hellish international break.
I love international football. It's great.
Love international football. Don't like the absence of club football and the absence of content that then...
Always find it's this first week, isn't it? You get into next week, then you're building towards a game, then, aren't you?
You are, but also, by next week, we'll have had Leeds United players in action in international. Stuart Dallas will have played in a Northern Ireland victory in Holland by that stage. So that'll obviously provide...
How long
natural rate.
tick off Graham mentioning Dallas on your spreadsheet, on your bingo card.
Just went for McCallum on a full set.
So yeah, we'll be able to look ahead to that, but it's... Even as a club fan, when you look at the calendar and you're looking for your next fixture and you realise that it's not for another 2 weeks, it's just horrible, isn't it? It just breaks the flow. And particularly when you've just had a defeat, you know, and you really want to put that to bed. And I imagine for players as well. I mean, unless you're going and enjoying Iceland, like Ben White and Calvin Phillips are together, with obviously their partners tagging along as a third and fourth wheel, I think it must just be a little frustrating, unless you've got a niggle that you want to rest. If you've just lost in the last game before international break, it must feel like a long time before you get the chance to go out again and put it right.
Yeah, I can remember the times when we'd lose before an international break, and it does seem long. I think Carlos Cobran came out and said, "Oh, it much preferred a game on Tuesday just to get out of the system." But then, like I said, the players get a couple of days off, recharge the batteries. So that aspect is quite good as well. I think it's important as well for players to have that little break, especially it's more of a mental break, get away from the training ground, get away from seeing the same faces day in, day out. Obviously, Calvin and Ben must like seeing each other's faces. but no, it's, I've always wanted a game straight away, after any defeat, get one on Tuesday, get it out of the system straight away. But it is a strange international break. But the good thing at the moment, there is a few Leeds players getting called up into international squads, isn't there? So it keeps that kind of, I don't know, a little eye on the fixtures, but keep it a little bit exciting, shall we say.
One player that might find himself busy in future international breaks, who is has been in Iceland, Ben White. You did a segment with him for LUTV talking about his positions and talking about what's asked of him. What have you made of him, first of all, since he's come to Leeds?
I think he's first class. There's always that argument going back to when Pontus were at the club and it came out that he was going to leave. And I think everyone associated with the club, probably keep Bielsa and his staff, maybe some of the players out of that. But I think everyone else connected were kind of panicking, thinking, we're losing. Yes, let's not hide away from the fact Pontus is a good player and a big character at the club. The fans liked him. So when he was leaving and you're looking around at the options, and we just had Ben White come into the club, a young player, being out on loan a couple of times. So for him to actually step up and, in my opinion, be an upgrade on Pontus speaks volumes for him personally. And just how he's settled into the place, the building. We had a little joke there about him going away with Calvin, the two girlfriends. Just shows you how well he's actually settled. But in terms of what he does as a performance out on the pitch, that's where he gets judged ultimately. Different class. Absolutely superb. I can make a joke where the kit men must love him because I don't think they have to wash his kit. He doesn't seem to sweat, doesn't seem to get the kit dirty, never slides in really, never caught out of position. And Kiko must love playing with him at side because they can just roll him the ball. He might glide past somebody, do a simple pass. Whatever he does the right thing at the right moment, and ultimately that's what you want from a centre-half.
What I liked at Millwall was when they were taking the goal kicks kind of later on in the second half, and Ben White was clearly demanding the ball with two Millwall players stood on the edge of the box, you know, and Ben White still wanted to play from there. He felt that he could still play from a central position with Millwall players closing in.
He almost took the ball off Kiko at one point and like ran so close, about 2 yards away from him. But that shows the confidence he has. But it'll be interesting to see going forward what will happen with his future long term for Leeds, because you can see him being at this club for 10 plus years, the way he's going.
They're going to have to stump up an awful lot of money, I think. If Webster, what did Webster from Bristol City go for? He went for 25 million. But Brighton, I'd be interested in Brighton's thinking on Ben White as well, because they must be watching and thinking, he did it at League Two. Newport raved about him. He did it at Peterborough. They loved him as well. He's gone to Leeds, and Leeds fans have fallen in love with him because his performances have been so good. And this won't be going unnoticed at Brighton.
Should we start not bigging him up, saying his
Brian,
if you're listening,
the
yeah, they don't need him. It's not so much January I'm thinking of, but I'm thinking more of that they must be seeing him work his way up the leagues, thinking we have a Premier League centre half in the making here on our hands. That, you know, Leeds are obviously the reason he's gone out on loan is that Leeds can develop him further, and he'll have played under Bielsa for a year by the time he's scheduled to go back to Brighton. I find it hard to believe that Brighton would turn around at the end of this year and say, you know what, let's sell him. Like, surely they'll look at him and think, this is a real player here.
Yeah, well, hopefully Brighton get relegated and Leeds go up, and then it's fine. It sort of answers itself.
When you did your segment with him for LUTV, what did you take away from that about his understanding of the game or how he sees football?
In possession took out the way he sees the picture in front of him, and he spoke about briefly hitting those diagonal passes that we've seen him hit loads, but he don't mind doing it from a deeper position, even if he's on his 18-yard box, just because he says he knows that pass is on. And that's testament to the players in front of him. They have to work ever so hard off the ball to create that little bit of space for the man on it. So the option's there to him do that 50, 60-yard diag, because it's, as in opinion, it's a no-risk pass. It's something he feels comfortable doing. When you speak to probably a lot of centre-halves up and down the league, they'll be winding the leg up, trying to smash it as far as they can. Where to him, it's second nature. So that's probably in position, just how deep he has. He likes to have options. He'll know there's always a right-back option. Can go back to Kiko, maybe go out to the other centre-half, but then he's got that longer option if they do a full press to the opposition. So just how he just spoke about it, it was just second nature for him to smash these diags like it were nothing. And then out of position, because obviously we dominate games, have a lot of territory, so you'll find our centre-halves a lot of times stood on the halfway line. And I just wanted to know what he was like, what he was thinking in terms of that. Everybody just spoke about, especially his playing next to Liam Cooper, said Coops is talking all the time, organising in front. You see Calvin Phillips, if they play two strikers up there, he'll drop in. So they're always thinking the worst case scenario, where there's probably, sometimes you think under different managers where teams are set up really attacking, they don't really think to Man City. They really might leave a 1v1, 2v2. Well, we always like that extra number, so it was good that he thinks danger first from a centre-half, which suggests to me he's a very, very good player, because he's got that side of his game as well.
Cooper, his performances before the injury, I thought, were very, very good as well. Do you think that has made life easier for White to settle into the Championship? The fact that he's got a centre-half who's been dominant in the air, been rarely beaten this season, and himself is playing in a very, very consistent vein of form.
Definitely. Well, you look to the side of Ben White, on his right-hand side he's got Stuart Dallas, who's arguably the best right-back in the division at the moment, and at the side of him he's got the captain. So automatically you probably just feel, as a player, you think, right, I'm comfortable with what's around me, I don't have to worry about Dallas messing up, I don't have to worry about Coops messing up, I can concentrate on my own game. And for a young player coming into a massive club, making another step up in his career, that's all you want. You just want to concentrate on your own game, not worrying what other people are doing around you. So, now, yeah, it's massive, like Graham. So, and the partnership them two have struck already, they do look confident. You can tell they look like playing with each other.
It's nice then that Kiko Casilla introduces some variables and some not so comfortable moments, so that Ben White doesn't have it too easy, because he does love to come a long way for the ball. What I love about Leeds games is when that happens, is that you know that after the game there'll be a lot of screen grabs showing the goal, the penalty area, and a 10 yard area outside the box, and Kiko's nowhere to be seen because he's gone marauding to get the ball. But as of yet this season, every time he's made that decision to come and get the ball, it's worked out. Like, it's been the right decision. It might be a decision that Leeds fans might not want him to take, but he hasn't got it wrong yet this season, has he?
I don't think this is a Kiko Casilla thing. I think it's a keeper in general. Any keeper for your club, if you see him outside his penalty area, everyone has a little panic.
Mm.
Even as a player in your own team, you think, you've got to get there, he has to get there. But no, I think you're right. I think his starting positions this season have been so much better than last year. At times, probably been a touch a little deeper, because he's just reading the game a lot better. I think he's accustomed the pace of the Championship. He'll know when it has to come out, and he hasn't done it every game, and I think that decision making's been crucial. And the times he has come out, you think, Kiko, you got to get there. Like I say, that's just for any goalkeeper, but when he has come, he's got to the ball, so it proves he's made the right decision. So, and that shows to me he's adjusting to the Championship a lot more this year, and just looks a more round solid goalkeeper, and again that spreads confidence to your back four.
Who's the best keeper you played with at Leeds United?
The best goalkeeper?
Who did you have?
Ankergen, Shane Higgs, Andy Lonergan, Liverpool's finest. Kasper Schmeichel. Growing up, Scott Carson was there growing up. I loved playing with Scott Carson, but that was like when we were a bit younger. Casper Anken was good, a bit crazy with Casper.
Flappy, wasn't he?
A little bit. Yeah. All these goalkeepers, though, they're all fantastic shot stoppers.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Probably the best one with his feet out of them all were Kasper Schmeichel. He could ping a ball 80, 90 yards, not a problem. But then probably didn't see the best of him where you see him now. Didn't see the best of him. But that's probably pinpoint a goalkeeper.
See, I was just associate Ankrigan with Old Trafford.
Yeah.
So therefore he's my favourite.
Nah, look, he was a good character to have all around as well with Kasper Ankrigan.
Something else you can give us an insight into. I spoke to Jermaine Beckford recently and asked him if he could put into words what it felt like to score a goal for Leeds United, and he struggled to kind of put that emotion and that feeling into words. Said that he got goosebumps thinking about it. Talk us through your goal for Leeds United.
How long you got? Every time I tell this story, always adds a few yards to the away from the goal. But ultimately, Graham, sometimes people don't strike a ball like a bit of dip, bit of swerve, bit of power. Don't matter. You could have two keepers in net that night. It wouldn't have saved it. But no, it was funny. It was against Frank Fielding, and I kind of know Frank a little bit. And later, well, the following day, he'd been called into the England under 21 squad, and Fab Delph had as well. So them two were going to go off. But obviously I was ribbing him after the game, so I can't believe you threw that one in front. Fab were getting into him as well, so no, it was good banter. But I only hit the ball because I think we were 2-0 up at the time, so I thought, look, if it flies into Rio's head, I'm not going to get a bollocking from the side here. So, but like I said, too much power, too much dip on it, so yeah, two keepers wouldn't have saved that.
Is that your favourite moment, or is the obvious one the Millwall, where you basically ran the length of the field and put it on a plate for Becky?
I always say my favourite moment, making my debut.
Right.
Just because being a fan, always grew up. Used to have Leeds United wallpaper in my bedroom, curtains, lampshades, duvet, yeah. Cover, everything Leeds. Used to be Leeds obsessed, to be honest. So to actually make my debut, that nothing would ever beat that. And the Mill, it was a fantastic moment.
Everyone talks about the noise that goal. I was there that night and I can't remember it being as loud as that ever since, really.
Even now, airs is back in my neck and standing up, just thinking about it, because I always remember when I've crossed it in, I was kind of laid on the floor, kind of put my arms up in the air, looked around and I've seen Johnny Howson and Andy Robinson just sliding into me, and we had a little pile on and a little hug and everything on the floor, and just the noise were unreal. But ultimately we didn't win the game. We lost, so that kind of took the edge away from it, because I'd sacrificed my own personal kind of performances or whatever just so we'd win. I've always kind of been that kind of had that mindset, so but now nothing will ever beat my debut, just being a Leeds fan to play for the club.
Is it not absolutely terrifying that you've dreamed of this, it's now here, it's in front of thousands of people, knowing what can go wrong, you know, the millions of things that can go wrong. Is it not absolutely terrifying to make a debut as a youngster?
You'd have the nerves, but I think you have to look on the opposite side, where look what can happen. What happens if we do well? What happens if I play well? I might get another run in the team. If I do well, the fans. But I always made an effort after every game, even if we lost, especially at Elland Road, to go around and clap the fans, because I can remember being a young fan in the ground, and if we lost a game, you'd come away saying, moaning about, oh, so-and-so never come and give the fans a clap.
Fans love that, don't they?
But I just find that can always stuck with me, being a young fan growing up. So I always kind of made the effort just to appreciate people coming out and giving us the support. Ultimately, yeah, players don't go over the line to lose games of football. It just happens. So always,
Calvin Phillips does it, doesn't he? Calvin Phillips goes in, goes.
A lot of them do now, to be fair. Yeah. Cooper always does it, and that's good to see from your captain.
Yeah, yeah. But I loved every time I played, especially at Elland Road. I used to love the build up. Yeah, I used to just get nervous, the drive from home down to the ground. I used to get there about 12:45, get parked up. All the fans different now, obviously, when the team bus arrives, they do the walking now, which I think is a fantastic idea. The fans used to be around the players' cars, so used to do their pictures, autographs, all that kind of carry on. But I wanted to get down early just to speak to as many fans as I can, just so soak the atmosphere up. And then that probably kind of one of my little things, just to get me switched on for the game, thinking, right, it's game time now. Done all that kind of build up. That's part of my preparation. And then into the change rooms we go. So but now it's never feared it, just always had a buzz for it.
When you've had that buzz then, and you've played for your hometown club, your boyhood club, and you've played in massive games with huge atmospheres, when you play at a lower level, so when you play for Harrogate, did it ever feel like you were just going through the motions before you walked out to play for Harrogate, or do you still feel like the buzz of playing football? How does it compare?
Yeah, I always say the buzz for winning games. Just everyone, we've all played football, haven't we? Whether it's five-a-side or whatever. And when if you win a game even like that, you still get a good feeling, don't you? So, and I always try to set high standards. And Harrogate, we had like quite a young squad, and there were a time when I was the oldest player at 30 at Harrogate. So I felt sometimes players, like the younger lads, might have looked up to me to kind of set an example. So if my standards slip, then they might look at it and think, well, if Parks' standards slipped here, we can slip ourselves. So no, like, yeah, you'll never get the feeling of playing in front of 30,000 fans. But the time we got promoted at Harrogate, the playoff game, and then the playoff final, the big games for the club. So that gives you that little bit of more adrenaline, bit more excitement. So, but it was all about just setting high standards for myself, and then for the rest of the lads as well, and then ultimately winning.
And even when you come from a higher level, when you play it, I mean, I've covered a lot of non-league, and you would see players, young players, come on loan from like Sheffield Wednesday, Sheffield United to non-league clubs in the it used to be the Evosic Northern Premier or the National League North, and they would struggle because they were playing against men who played at that level. It is not an easy thing to go and play at that level, even if you've experienced the higher level.
If anyone watches under 23 football, it's all a bit nice. I've seen a lot of under 23 football. I think we're an exception. I think Leeds under 23 is they can do both sides of the game. How the development, the training they do get sets them up for real football, to be honest. But no, at my time in playing for Guiseley, for Harrogate, we'd sign players on loan, young lads from clubs higher up in the Football League, and they come and they struggle just because they can't adapt to the thing. Yeah, they might have ability, but if I was playing against one of them, first thing I'd do, old fashioned, give him a kick, let him know you're there. Mm. And they've probably not been used to that. And then they'll drift out of the game, then all of a sudden I've got an easy 90 minutes personally then. So that side of things is difficult for young players. One of the better ones that came through, it was at Leeds last year, Liam Kitchen. He's gone to Forest Green Rovers now. He were excellent at Harrogate. His attitude, his application, and that just shows what work goes on with the under-23s players coming through the system, because he looked like a man already. He was on, I think, 18 with Kitch, 19 maybe. But now he's gone to Forest Green, he's playing well there. I think they're top of the table at the moment, League Two. So it just shows what we're doing personally as a club. It's obviously working, because players, yeah, it's great to see them coming through the system. We see Jamie Shackleton, for example. Calvin, obviously, a bit younger. But with Shaq's, how he just adapted to it straight away. Men's football, a lot of players they'll move on from the club, but then go have careers in the Football League themselves. So it is a testament to what the club do at the moment.
So since you've stopped playing football, what's life been like?
Very unfit. Played football last night. I'm a bit stiff today, actually. I'm not gonna lie. We won though, so that were good. But now I really enjoy it. The big thing, just to being back involved, working with the club. I'd say, like, for me, the pinnacle, playing for Leeds United, nothing could ever probably top that, in my opinion. But just working in any capacity, so doing what we're doing now, work at LUTV. And I have to say, it's opened my mind up to what goes into a club on a day-to-day basis. Seeing you guys quite often at match days, maybe sometimes on the press day on a Thursday up at Four Parch. There's a lot kind of go behind the scenes. Where's a player? You rock up. We used to have to be in for 10 o'clock, start at 10:30. You're back home by 2, so you don't really see everything that goes around. So, and what I would say is a lot of good people associated with the club work ever so hard. And a lot of really skillful people, and I think ultimately that's where the club's come on leaps and bounds in the last few years, because probably not had that, where everyone's kind of been on the same hymn sheet, wanting success for Leeds, working ever so hard to ultimately get Leeds in the Premier League. So I think that's what I've noticed massively. I say a lot of good people working associated with the club, trying to get the best for Leeds.
And when you look at your future ambitions, is it media that you look at, or is it coaching, or what areas are you looking at?
I just like enjoy being involved in football. So whether, like I say, it's with the media, the coaching, I'm just finalising, finishing off my UEFA B. So, and I should have done that 10 years ago, but typical footballer, the course has always got hold May time. So it was either go on a course in May or go on holiday. And you'd be surprised how many players choose the holidays, to be fair. You'd be very surprised. So, but no, I'm just getting the B just so I tick it off. Get that ticked off. It's just another string to the bow, so they say. But I do enjoy the media side. I like the build up to a game, looking at the opposition, where their strengths, weaknesses are, where we can hurt them potentially. And then you might say, oh yeah, for example, the team might be really poor at set pieces, and then they might score a set piece against you, so you think, well yeah, that didn't really go to plan, did it? But no, I enjoy that kind of, the analyst kind of in-depth looking at the side of the stuff. But still, the match day is what everyone kind of works towards, don't they? They're like the buzz for it, get the 3 points. Everyone's buzzing in the office and around the ground. When we don't get a win, everyone's kind of gloomy. We might look at each other like we decided, long drive up again, isn't it? So, but that's football. Ultimately, football's all about winning on a match day. When everyone's happy, when you don't, everyone's a bit upset.
You mentioned there about you go in at half two and leave at half ten and leave at two. So what would it be like for someone under Bielsa who's suddenly doing 8 till 8 pre-season? Is that a shock to the system, or is you know, because obviously you talk there, it's basically 4.5-5 hours ish usually. Suddenly gone to a 12-hour day.
I think the long, long days under the manager now is predominantly for pre-season.
Yeah.
But the only thing I can relate to was probably Dennis Wise, when we were as fittest, we used to just run, old-fashioned type of running, but it worked for us then. Probably best condition, probably all that group of players were probably in at the time. But no, it is a shock to the system. You hear the players speak about it. Some of them might not even, if they've got young babies, might not even see the children all day, because they're up out of the house before they're awake, they're back when the baby's asleep. So it's a mentally difficult thing, but ultimately it's worth it when you see the performances and the results come start of the season. So that's why you can buy into it. Players don't mind working hard. I'll say, yeah, they do, mad. They'll have a moan and a groan, don't get me wrong. But when ultimately they know it's for something, it's for a purpose, i.e. challenging at the top of the table to get promoted to the Premier League, you make these sacrifices. So I think it's just part and parcel of football now. You've got to be an athlete. I remember, I'm going to name drop him, Andy Robinson. We all remember Robbo. He came signing from Swansea, came into pre-season. He'd had a very good off-season, put it that way.
He was a unit, I remember when he was a unit.
Yeah, he'd had a very good off-season at Robbo.
He was skillful, but, though. I remember him tearing a few teams apart. I used to sit in the East End, which would have been on your side, on the left, where left back. And I remember him, I think he used to play right wing. Was it right wing or he used to play?
He could either play, I find it better on the left, right or right. Left.
But I remember him playing in front of me when I used to have my season ticket, and he tore a few left backs apart. And I was just thinking, but if only he got himself fit.
technical ability, different class. Like ability all round, actually. Really good player, Robbo. Great lad as well. Fantastic to have around. But a player like Robbo who'd come back after a good off season, not being the fittest or fitter than he should have been, them days have gone. You have to turn up to pre-season almost in the same condition as you finish the season. So gone are the days where you use pre-season to get fit. You can't do that anymore. That's when you'll pick up injuries, because especially us, we want to beat the levels we were at last year, especially pre-season. It might be only a little 1-2%, but looking for those little increases. So if you haven't looked after yourself, you'll pick up an injury. and when you're on the sidelines, someone else will get given that chance, and then you're playing a waiting game come start of the season then.
Fans like it as well. Fans like to know that, that Leeds players are doing everything they possibly can.
Everything.
Because that's like that work ethic, and for working class people who watch football, who work themselves to the bone every day, then when they turn up to cheer on their heroes and learn that their heroes are also putting in long shifts and really putting a shift in, then I think it endears them to the fans.
Is it not the minimum that's required though, as a footballer, well, yeah, just to be fit?
But there's fitness and there's being fit.
Yeah,
and there's,
no, I
and
know there's, what you mean. I'm just thinking, from a terrorist point of view, the minimum requirement when you pay your ticket, I think, as a fan, is that the player is in condition to play the game.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
as long as they're fit, if it's the ability, they don't have the ability, I think you can accept that. And you go, right, well, clearly he's not got the ability to play at this level. But I think if he's struggling to run 20 yards, then you're a bit like, well, I can do this. You see what I mean? Like,
yeah.
It's the ability that should separate.
You'd be surprised how many people don't take it seriously, because if it was that easy and that much of a given, every team will be a kind of even playing level in terms of fitness. So it's more kind of a culture you create at a club.
Yeah. I just find it staggering, because as a fan, having watched a lot of Leeds teams in the past, the minimum requirement when I've been paying for my season ticket or tickets to go wherever, Walsall, MK Dons, is that they turn up and they're fit enough to play a game of football and play to a decent standard.
And I always find when people say, oh, yeah, but I've given 100% today, that's you shouldn't even have that as a question. It's not even a minimum requirement. That should just be second nature, because everyone can have an off day on the ball or whatever, but the work ethic and the desire to play for your club, more so than Leeds, because that's what Leeds as history has been built upon. 100 years, the birthday, so.
I mean, that's what sort of comes back to Bamford's last year, because not that he wasn't, but I think his playing style is quite lethargic at times, and especially if he's getting dominated by a defender, I think it can come across as laziness. It's maybe not, but I think that's maybe where some of his criticism was born from last year, is that he kind of looked like he wasn't maybe trying, but he obviously was. But you know, I think that's just natural reaction, and that's maybe where this has come from a little bit last year.
You've got to be fit to play the manager's style as well. I remember at Chesterfield, Gary Caldwell was the manager, wanted to play 3-5-2. And I went to the pre-season tour in Spain and watched them train, and to my untrained eye, yeah, that was the last pre-season trip abroad for a while. But to my untrained eye, it looked like they were really putting the work in, and they looked incredibly fit. And then when Gary Caldwell left the club and Jack Lester came in, and as a lot of managers do, because it buys them a bit of time, they say, you know, the players aren't really in the shape that I want them to be in. Yeah. And then it kind of, it puts a little bit of a different expectation when it comes to results, because the manager's still trying to get them fit. But Jack Lester had them doing double sessions to try and get them fitter, to play a different, because he wanted to play a more intense style of play. It was 4-2-3-1, and he wanted them to press all over the pitch. He wanted them to run a lot more than they had been doing. So they'd been fit to play 3-5-2, but they weren't fit to play his style. To play Bielsa's style of football, you have to be a machine. And I think that's why Lee Bowyer said what he did, that he'd love to know what Bielsa does to get them in that shape, because he said his Charlton players are machines, but these are well-oiled machines, because Leeds will attack you relentlessly. And if you win the ball, there's that famous clip from last season, isn't there, when 7 Leeds players chased back to win the ball back. And they can do that for 90 minutes and not get tired. So there is a different level of fitness required to play this way.
And it's also when they go away from Four Patch, how they're looking after themselves at home, what are they eating. So massive credit goes to all the chefs, Izzy, everyone down at Four Patch, the food they prepare, Nessan, nutritionists as well. So look, the players are stupid. And let's be honest, they can't be robots all the time. So yeah, there might be a time they think, I fancy a pizza tonight, but they'll know times and places when to have like these types of food, when to enjoy themselves. So, but
if you're being weighed in though, like, if you know you've got a weigh-in coming,
when they're doing the skin folds the next day, they will definitely not be having a pizza the night before. but no, it is important to have that kind of little mental switch off, just because you can't live your life like that 24/7, 365 a year. So, but But no, the work that goes into him, yeah, the fitness coaches, the staff under Marcelo, yeah, that's where you get your hard yards in. But then don't throw it away by going home and not eating the right things, looking after your body, doing your recovery in the gym. All these little aspects have to all go together to ultimately be the fittest and the best pro you can be. And you can see everyone buys into it at Leeds because, like I say, the amount of yards and the amount of distances they cover, high intensity sprints like they do, they'll be up there with probably the top team in the Championship for that.
And it's also why they can go to Millwall and dominate with 10 men.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, they have that fitness level to make it feel like they've still got 11.
Joe put out a tweet before we started recording to ask for questions. Some of them are better than others.
I shouldn't have done that.
No, that was a mistake. there are a couple of reasonable questions. Best player you played with at Leeds United?
Best player I played with, I always say, growing up was Aaron Lennon. Just immense speed, everything. And he used to get 30, 40 goals a year. Yeah. I won the under-17 league. And the amount of goals he got that year were just frightening. It's fair, that team were different class what we played in. Moving forward, I want to say Johnny, but I don't want to. I don't want
to
say that.
You're not allowed to say your mate.
No, I'd go with Snod, Robert Snodgrass.
Yeah,
top player. Probably even a better lad, actually, as well.
Another question from Thomas Meredith: would Ben give Struick a chance in the starting 11 anytime soon in light of Cooper's injury?
It's a good discussion, is that? It's a very good question as well. Put it this way, I wouldn't have any problems in being put in at all. Think back to last year with Apo Harme, who was now at Barnsley, got his chance, got thrown in. I think there were probably slight more injuries around the centre-half position when he got his chance. But in my opinion, I think Stewart is probably a little bit a level above Apo Harme, so... I think at the moment we've got plenty of experienced players back available in around. Obviously, Berardi is now available. Ayling's back fit. So it's not like we're scratching around trying to find people. Who can we put in? But if you got given a chance, I would not be hesitant one little bit.
Tom, at Murgs 78, wants your views on the season so far. Well, we've kind of done that. But do Leeds actually have a chance of automatic promotion, given recent failings of not enough goals and being very easy to score against? And how do you think Bielsa will overcome those two foibles?
Ultimately, we're 2 points from top with plenty of games to go. So let's not panic. Let's not think, wow, this season might be a disaster or whatever. We're 2 points from the top. And every game I've seen so far, we've been the best team. Yeah, it's would we like to win every game 3-4-0? We'll just cruise away with every game. It doesn't happen. Championship people, team look completely different to us. It's more ways to skin a cat than just the one, isn't there? So let's just all relax. Let's get this international break all over. Massive game Birmingham with all that's going around the club, the birthday, the centenary. Get a good result there, and like you said, Jay, that hopefully something like this sending off the referee decision. Things going against us, can it galvanise us? So who knows, but in my eyes, we're the best team in this division. Let's just prove on a consistent basis.
Brilliant. Well, thanks very much for joining us, Ben. That has been episode 69 of the Inside Elland Road podcast. We have an exciting, fancy new website that you can have a peruse around and enjoy some of our content. There's a piece about Jamie Shackleton with some insight from his mum about how his speed was not always an ideal thing. And we'll have everything and anything that happens over the next couple of days during this international break before Leeds United players finally start to play football again. Thanks very much for joining us.